Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and if Governor Cuomo is good to his word, the MTA began a new outreach and enforcement program over this past weekend to get homeless people out of the subways. This is because of an uptick in the number of people reportedly sleeping on the subways, and therefore a step up in police enforcement and outreach aimed at reducing homelessness on MTA trains. The move comes after Governor Cuomo issued a complaint about the MTA's handling of homelessness and implicitly of Mayor de Blasio's, saying the problem is, quote, worse than ever, and he created a homelessness task force within the agency, the MTA. Here's what he said on our show.
It's worse than ever. It's inhumane. It's unnecessary.
So what's behind the crisis? Do we even believe the numbers? And what happened this weekend that was any different, if anything? Joining me now, Giselle Ruthier, the policy director at the Coalition for the Homeless. Giselle, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Did anything happen this weekend, as far as you know?
I believe there was some, again, police enforcement at the end of the lines. And, you know, what the governor came out with this week is really just an extremely harmful practice meant to make it look like he's doing something when, in fact, he's ignoring all of the real solutions to homelessness. So this is actually really harmful. And what it will end up doing is shuffling people around, exposing them to the criminal justice system more than they already are, and not actually providing the real housing solutions that we need.
Well, what would the crime be if you say exposing them to the criminal justice system? Do they arrest people who are peaceably sleeping on the trains?
So there is enforcement from MTA police by the various rules of the MTA. So if someone's lying down or NYPD is also there, there could be tickets involved, there could be summonses involved. So there's many ways that people can interact with the criminal justice system in a way that's not going to eventually help them get off the streets.
What would you like to see instead?
Oh my goodness, so many things. We would actually like to see the governor step up with real solutions. So what he has done systematically since he's taken office is removed state funding from shelters and from rental assistance. And he's not followed through on a commitment he made in 2016 to build 20,000 units of supportive housing in New York State. We know the solutions to homelessness are housing. And so what we need from him are real state investments in supportive housing. We need the remainder of his commitment to build supportive housing. We need him to pass home stability support to create a statewide rental supplement for folks who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. And we need him to stop playing games and passing the blame and pretending that he knows more than everybody else.
I want to open up the phones for Giselle Ruthier from the Coalition for the Homeless as we get into different aspects of this. One of them is, and I don't know what her answer is going to be, if she even believes the numbers that there have been a 23% increase just in the last year in the number of people sleeping in the subways. Mayor de Blasio did not question that stat when I asked him about it on Friday, but I've read now that some people do question that stat and whether it was artificially pumped up by a group that might stand to benefit financially from it. I would love to hear from anybody who either is currently homeless and sleeps sometime in the subways, or anybody who has ever slept in the subways in New York at any time in your life, because your voices are not generally heard in the media. And I want, if anybody happens to be out there with that experience in your life, let everybody else hear you a little bit about what leads somebody to sleep on the subway, what's it like in the middle of the night, what's it like to deal with law enforcement, why didn't you just go to a shelter, which is what a lot of people think. Come on, there are free beds. You can go to a shelter. Why would you sleep on the A train? And what your contact with social services personnel was. In addition, if anybody has a story to tell, 212-433-WNYC. And if you do, you get to weigh in on policy, too. What would you like to see done by the government? 212-433-WNYC. 9692. We'll see if anybody comes in who has had experience sleeping in the subway, and then in a few minutes we'll open it up to everybody else so you can hold on to your calls for Giselle Ruthier, for the Coalition for the Homeless, for the moment, unless you're somebody who's ever slept in the subway. 212-433-9692. So Giselle, this recent count, that's a federally mandated count, found 2,178 people currently sleeping on the subways. That was earlier this year. And that was an increase of 23% from last year. That's a huge increase if true, but I've seen that some people have cast shade on the methodology or how much they trust the group. Do you have an opinion about this?
We do. We've always criticized the methodology of what's called the hope count, because there is no reliable way to count folks on the streets that's consistent year by year. So some of the main problems that we have with this survey is that it's done one night a year, oftentimes on some of the coldest nights of the year, but we don't know. You know, the weather varies year by year, which makes it challenging to compare year by year. You know, one of the other important things too is that people know when the hope count is happening. And so there can be a lot of enforcement prior to that to make sure people are getting into shelters. And another major limitation is that only people who are specifically in a public place can be counted as homeless. So if someone's sheltering in an ATM vestibule, in a laundromat, in an all-night McDonald's, they're not going to be counted. And so there's a lot of things that are problematic about this methodology. And the best way we can look at trends in homelessness in New York City is looking at the shelter population, because we actually have very robust numbers for the number of people in shelters. And right now, there are 61,000 people sleeping every single night in the shelter system. The vast majority of people who are homeless in New York are in the shelter system, even though they're not the most visible. And so what we see is some of the most really devastating piece of homelessness in New York on the streets. But but folks in the shelter system, you know, these are moms with kids, these are working adults, these are seniors, these are people with disabilities. And we need to remember that the homeless population is so much larger, and we need to think about solutions for everybody.
Let's take a phone call from someone with, I think, a story about herself that goes back a ways. Desiree in Park Slope, thank you so much for calling. You're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, yes. I was homeless when I was younger, when I was in college. I went to a SUNY school in Westchester. And as you know, the trains going back there don't go all night. And so I would stay up on the subway all night because I worked in Union Square. I was in college, but I did not have I couldn't afford a dorm room. And I didn't have a family to go back to. So that was my solution. And it felt safer than just like sitting on a park bench or whatever. My experience then, I feel like, is a very different experience than what I see now. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I was not visibly homeless, so the only person who knew I was homeless was myself. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel as unsafe as I do now on the occasion when I've had to be on the train really late. What I notice now is that people sort of don't talk about the extremes of homelessness. They talk a lot about people who are in families or children, or they talk about people who are working and single but just don't have a home. But there are extremes of homelessness that get ignored every day. There are people who are dragging carts upon carts covered in filth and old clothes, and usually they're elderly people, so already a vulnerable population, we kind of just ignore it. Like, I don't ever hear any discussion about what to do with people who have reached such a severe state of homelessness, possibly mental illness, that they're just normal, invisible. "Quote unquote creatures wandering through the city, and nobody pays any attention to them."
Giselle, you want to talk to Desiree?
Sure. Yeah, and you know, maybe it's because I'm kind of in the bubble here of homeless policy, but this is certainly something we talk about a lot. And one of the bigger issues here is, you know, folks who are on the streets who are living with severe mental illness or substance use issues, or have severe disabilities, who are seniors. These folks at the end of the day, they need housing, but what they need is supportive housing. And so they need permanent affordable housing with support services attached to allow them to live in the community in an as independent way as possible. And so that solution is something that we've been pushing for years and has been not invested in a way to actually meet that need, which is why we're continuing to see people on the streets in extreme need. And they are, you're right, some of the most vulnerable people in our city.
Desiree, you said that when you did this in 1992, you felt safer than you do in the subways late at night today. I mean, 1992, that was around the peak of street crime in New York City.
And I just didn't, I didn't experience any kind of threat or anything to my person. And you know, perception is different, right? Like, I'm 51, I was in my 20s then. You feel invulnerable when you're in your 20s.
True.
You know, so it could also be that. But I just sort of feel like, it seems to me that there is this whole population of people who are in the subways overnight, who aren't going to reach out to get services, who need to be in a hospital first to get to take care of what is like visible medical conditions. Do you know what I mean? Like, they aren't the type of people who can say, I need help. They're people who don't even, may not even have spoken directly to a person in a really long time. And so, and I feel like I see more of that on the subways than I ever experienced the whole year and a half that I was on the subways. And I was on the subways a lot.
Desiree, thank you so much. I'm going to leave it there and get some other people on. But to her point, Giselle, is the nature of the problems that afflict the people who do find themselves sleeping in the subway, are those problems different today than in years past, as she's indicating just from her observation?
I don't think the nature necessarily is different, but the scope of the problem is different, right? We have more homelessness in New York City than we ever have, which means that we are also having more folks in shelters, more folks on the streets, more folks with serious mental illness. So the scope of the problem has grown, which has exacerbated what we're seeing as part of these problems. I mean, the other piece of it too is access to care, access to medical care, access to mental health care. Systems have changed over the past few years. I mean, a few years ago, the state underwent Medicaid redesign in an attempt to save money on the amount of money that they've been spending in the Medicaid system. And that has vastly changed how people access care. And so they may be hospitalized for a few days, but then discharged back to the streets, only to then be cycled back into the hospital system and back onto the streets. And so what we need are long-term solutions that allow people to stabilize first and foremost in their own home and then get access to the health and mental health care that they need.
Carlos in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carlos.
Yes, hi. How are you? I just kind of wanted to piggyback on what she just said. There needs to be more emphasis on equity and actually finding some sort of home and some sort of help for some of these people who are mentally ill. My wife works down on Canal by Lafayette, and last week she was punched by a homeless man who obviously was mentally ill. And, you know, there was no repercussion. There was, like, the police didn't do anything because, you know, like, I've called the police on several occasions. I live in Forest Hills. Right now I'm in Brooklyn. That's why I was telling the caller. The same thing. It's like you go and you approach the police. They say that the mayor has a rule that you cannot arrest them. You cannot do anything. And I'm like, I'm not asking you to arrest them. I'm asking you to get them help. You know, obviously, if you see somebody like acting out and acting erratically, and obviously EMS needs to answer and take them to a hospital, and they need to get evaluated and they need to get help. I'm not asking them to go and be put in a jail, obviously, but it's gotten out of hand. It feels like we're reverting back to the 80s.
Carlos, thank you so much for your story and your call, and I'm sorry about what happened to your wife. I'm going to play a clip for you, Giselle, and my guest is Giselle Ruthier from the Coalition for the Homeless, as we talk about homelessness in the subways in particular, with the MTA under Governor Cuomo's direction having begun a new, I don't know if sweep is too strong a word, but outreach of both social service offering of social services and law enforcement where they deem it necessary in the subways. Coalition for the Homeless is not happy about this because they see it as sicking the criminal justice system on people who primarily need housing. But to both callers so far have brought up the disorder question, even though that's not the question that we put out to the public. So this, I mean, in my ask, so obviously this is on people's minds, and there are other callers like that too. And we had former New York City Police Commissioner Bill Bratton on the show 2 weeks ago, and he was very much lauding the reduction in crime, violent crime in New York City, that he takes some credit for. Of course, he was both Rudy Giuliani's police commissioner and Mayor de Blasio's first police commissioner. And he said, yes, crime is down, but he also said disorder is up. Made that distinction between crime and disorder. And listen to how, without any prompting, he kind of related it to homeless people.
Every city in America is starting to see very significant increase in disorder on the streets. Disorder that's largely associated with, unfortunately, the term homeless, but is really around the issue of service-resistant individuals who, even if there were accommodations for them because of their emotional illness, their drug addiction, their alcoholic addiction, the psychological issues, would not take advantage of it. And we have a growing crisis in that particular with that particular problem. And why is that problematic? Because that's what people see every day.
What were you thinking as you heard Commissioner Bratton there? This is not a statement I would think the Coalition for the Homeless would be in love with.
No, but it reminds me of kind of the short-sighted view that a lot of people take, that homelessness is a quality of life issue for people who are not homeless,
right,
and not a quality of life issue for people who are homeless.
It can be both, right? It can be both,
but as the two callers that have called in have both acknowledged that what people need is help, right? And we need to not be focusing on this sort of criminal justice enforcement where we're just shuffling people around, because everybody knows that does not work. And when the former commissioner talks about this happening in other cities around the country, what he's acknowledging is that what he should be acknowledging is this longer term view that what we're seeing is an increase in rents in a lot of cities across the nation, and a decrease or stagnation of wages. And so we are seeing housing crises play out in cities all across the nation. And he may be saying that, well, that's resulting in disorder, when what it's actually resulting is in displacement, people turning to their just innate survival mechanisms to be able to get through what is an extremely traumatic experience of being removed from a home and not having another home. And so, again, it comes back to, what are the solutions to this problem we all agree is a problem, but what we need to think about is what's actually going to reduce it. And what's actually going to reduce it is actually if you treat people who are homeless like human beings. And what callers and what New Yorkers really understand is that they are human beings, and that we need to adjust our policies that are to focus on housing, to focus on supportive housing. And we don't have that. We don't have that political will either from the mayor or from the governor. And it's really exacerbating the crisis.
He was saying in that clip that to the extent that, quote, disorder is being perpetrated by homeless people, that it's the issue of what he called their service resistant individuals, that even though there are accommodations, they don't want to be taken to shelters. They don't want to be taken to wherever else the outreach people, as opposed to the law enforcement people, might want to take them. So service-resistant individuals, a meaningful category?
I hate that word, because what's actually being offered to people on the streets is not what they need. Or, in fact, it's nothing at all.
What do you see as being offered?
So what we have here are the tools, for example, the tools that street outreach have in New York City are they can bring somebody to the intake center of the shelter system, which many people who have been on the streets for a long time have already experienced, and for a variety of reasons, both legitimate, are not willing to enter the shelter system again. The shelter system is not designed to meet people's individual needs. It's designed to manage a crisis. And so, you know, for some people, going to the intake center at the old psychiatric hospital at Bellevue is just not something that they're willing to do or able to do. So that's one option, and that's not a realistic or appropriate option for a lot of folks. The other option is to wait around for 9 months to be deemed chronically homeless, to be placed in a low threshold, low barrier shelter called a safe haven. And there are a lot of challenges with that as well. People are transient. People are moving from place to place because they have to, because they're being displaced by law enforcement or told to move around from here to there. And so if they're not being seen on the streets, it could be on the streets for years and still not qualify for one of these low threshold shelters. What we should have is a system of low threshold shelters that's large enough to accommodate the need in the immediate term. But at the end of the day, the one thing that outreach workers don't have to offer people immediately is housing or very quick access to housing. And so that's what's missing. It's not that people are service resistant. When you talk to people, it's like they know what they want and they know what they need. That's just not what's being offered to them.
Debbie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, good morning. So I'm a therapist in a public school, and one of the families I worked with had a student who had a physical disability, and they became homeless and entered the shelters. Now, they had to enter a shelter. They could not stay on a subway, obviously, but they were desperate, and they were happy to get into a shelter system in the city. However, what took place was they were saying to them, look, we're going to try to get you housing, but we want to see that you're interested and out there getting that housing. So if we make you an appointment to go to a particular place where we can, you know, transfer you over, and you have to check it out, you need to go there, no matter what. You have to go there. So the father would say to them, well, I just looked up the address and checked that place, and it does not have an elevator. It doesn't matter, they said. You have to go. If you don't go, we will, you know, put a check off that you were resistant. And so he would have to take off from his job that he needed to keep things going just to go to a place that could not help them or support them because there was no elevator, go there, connect with the person so that person could check him off, and then he can go back. And this is was the most ridiculous thing. He went to so many of these things. And this, I think part of the problem is that the only person he could tell about this was me. And being in public school system, there's no power there. Mm-hmm. There's no there. Mm-hmm. So there's no place for a family like this to say, this is ridiculous. I am a worthy person, and I have a situation with my family, and I am willing. But I, clearly, why would I take off from work to go to a building that doesn't have an elevator? And so I wish that there was an outlet or a place, a third party, maybe a college, university, where it would be like the Innocence Project, but it would be like people in the shelters could call and say, my name is, this is what's happening, whether it's abuse, whether it's violence, whether it's ridiculous requests made by the bureaucrats mm-hmm. over there, so that somebody could follow up. And the person, the family, wouldn't get hurt from this. I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Debbie. Would that third party be an advocacy group like yours, Coalition for the Homeless?
It absolutely would be. I wanted to say that the Coalition for the Homeless, we don't operate shelters because we're the independent monitor of the shelter system. And this goes back to our founding in the early 1980s when the right to shelter for homeless single men was established. We, by the courts, were appointed the independent monitor of the shelter system, which means we have full access to the single adult shelter system. And just a few years ago, when there was a lot of press around conditions in the family shelter system, the mayor appointed us the independent monitor of the family shelter system, and now we have access to those buildings. And we see these issues all the time. This, I'm not at all surprised by this example. And so we're constantly advocating for individual cases and putting out fires and trying to talk to folks and make sure that people are actually getting the access that they need. But this is a prime example of like the paternalistic bureaucratic system that's been in existence now for decades that we're fighting for, both kind of on an individual advocacy level as much as we can. But part of what our broader advocacy is doing is trying to make sure that we don't have a system that's set up this way, but that we have a system where someone who needs an emergency access to shelter because they've been displaced, they can get it, but that they can immediately access the housing market either either with a rental voucher or movement into a new unit built by the city, and that the housing is actually there.
Robert in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Robert.
Hi. I was in the shelter system. I think somebody ought to say the instructions you get when you go there. Put your shoes under the legs of your bed because they will be stolen. Put a towel around your neck because someone may try to slit your throat. And most important of all, have three or four people with you. You need your own crew because somebody's got to stay up late watching the other guys. Somebody's got to get up early to take the shift. There's two people in the middle. Someone's always got to be watching you when you sleep because they'll kill you. There are crazy people in there who just go around with razors slitting people's faces.
Robert, two questions.
You can't go in the bathroom by yourself. That would be insane.
Robert, two questions from your experience.
Don't go in the shelters.
I think you just answered the first one. Does that inform why as many people sleep in the subway?
It's too dangerous. The only people who get protection are families. They get a little room to themselves. The single men, you're going to die.
And can the shelters
safer on the subway?
Can the shelter system be made safe, in your opinion?
It's a jail with no guards. What are you talking about? How can you make that safe?
Thank you very much. Giselle, your response.
I totally want to validate this man's experience. I think for single adults, the system is in large part, you know, larger shelters with large dormitory settings, people with varying degrees of needs, and it's intimidating. It can be scary. There can be violence. There can be conflict, and that is a big turnoff for people who cannot deal with it, who do not want to deal with that. But actually, there is a model of shelter where that is much less likely to happen, and it's called safe havens. So low threshold model of shelter, you don't have to sign in every night for your bed, you don't have to be there at curfew at 10 p.m. or risk losing your bed. You often have a smaller space or your own private space, and there's a level of dignity and humanity given to folks who are in that type of shelter system that's not given to people in the broader dorm-style shelters. And that's something that we could be expanding to a much greater degree to make sure that people feel safe and feel dignity and don't feel that their personal safety is at risk. And that's a really important change that we need to make to the shelter system.
Well, we have to leave it here for now. Obviously unresolved, but obviously to be continued. We'll see what happens with this new social service outreach and law enforcement push that the MTA and Governor Cuomo said was starting this weekend. And of course, we will keep Giselle Ruthier, Policy Director at the Coalition for the Homeless, in the conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.